Welcome to Agape Ministries Podcasts, a whole new way of thinking. Episode 190, part 4 of the talk given by Richard Rohr. The talk is entitled Contemplative Vision.
I'm going to use just a play on words. The first one, two, and three, you tend to measure reality. It's all quantifying information and data and facts. Like we old-time Catholics, you know, three masses were better than one. You know, Jesus only had one mass his whole life. Did you ever think of that? You know? But... At early level thinking, everything more is better. It's all quantified. Seven was really good, and nine was just miraculous. You know, nine of anything. We called it a novena. You just do it nine times, and it just bends the arm of God. He can't resist. No, these aren't bad people. They're good people, but it's all the quantification of reality, measuring reality. When you get to 3.5, you know what's happened is you've met reality. Once you meet reality instead of measuring reality, your whole vision changes. It becomes what Martin Buber calls the I-thou relationship. Everything's about presence. Everything's about connection. It's not about being correct anymore. It's about being connected. Those are two different games, right? It's not about being right. It's about being in right relationship, like the Trinity. Early level Christianity is obsessed with being right. I'm right, because that's a power game. Right relationship, you almost never get right relationship till after you've apologized and forgiven. You know that, you who are married, don't you? And after that, you don't feel so right anymore. You had to admit that she was half right, you know, maybe more than that, or he was half right. Forgiveness and apology always humiliates the ego. We don't want to be in right relationship. We'd much sooner be autonomously right. you know, even Dr. Phil says this. You've heard Dr. Phil, huh? Wasn't he from Texas? I think he was. Yeah. And he says, halfway through every marriage, you've got to ask the couple in marriage counseling, you got to decide today, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? And I agree with him. In the marriage counseling I've done, 8 out of 10, I want to be right. I don't want to be happy. They wouldn't say it that way. They think they can be right and be happy. It never happens. It never happens. If your agenda is, I'm going to be right in every argument with my wife, you will never be happy. All right? I can tell you that for sure. If you want to be right in every argument with the church or the country, you're never going to be happy. Because you're still in the first half of life. You're still concerned with I've got better information than you've got. So knowing by affinity is the beginnings of contemplation. Where God in me knows God. The Spirit in me recognizes the Spirit over there. Love in me recognizes and increases love over there. It's not a logical knowing of reality. It's an intuitive feel for the whole, right? Now, logicians will dismiss it. They say, oh, that sounds sentimental. The Pope would even call it probably relativism. You know, I don't think so. Because I'm not for a moment here trying to dismiss your critical faculties. If I can say this, I'm trying to sharpen your critical faculties, right? So you can really read between the lines what looks like it's happening and what's really happening. You know, our politicians love to say, if it looks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, it's a duck, you know? That's level 1 and 2, all right? Level 3.5 says, you know, it could be a swan or a goose, right? But it never occurred to them, you know, oh, there are, you know, or a loon, you know, but if you've never seen a loon, you don't know that it could pass for a duck, but it isn't. All right. See, but they're still measuring reality. If it looks like a duck, quacks like a duck, it's a duck. That's dualistic thinking. They love to talk that way, even people in the church who should know about paradox. That was the whole beginning conference we gave this year where Mary Beth Ingham joined me, and she's a master on John Duns Scotus. And she presented how his thinking was always the dealing with mystery and with paradox. Why? Because John Duns Scotus' entire philosophy was built on the doctrine of the Trinity. That if the Trinity is the template of reality, reality is relational, not autonomous, not self-sufficient. So this is the crossover point. When you can move from analytic to intuitive, I want to say it again, the only way is to pass you over. Great love, great suffering, and primarily, and most quickly, one moment of God experience. One moment where the veil parts and you know. And you know that it's okay, that you're okay. It takes away all fear. It only needs to happen once. And you know, your universe is reshaped. And you will forever read reality from a very different platform, with a very different set of eyes. Now, I warn you, at that stage, even 3.5, where it's just beginning to dawn on you, you will feel a little crazy. You will not fit into most cocktail party conversation. You will say fee on both of your houses to Republicans and Democrats, to liberals and conservatives. You won't fit into any of the usual groups. That's why Jesus said, when you follow me, the whole world will hate you. Those usual labels don't make much sense anymore. You recognize liberals have half the truth and conservatives have half of the truth, you know? And the Son of Man, the one who follows the Son of Man, has nowhere to lay his head. Really, not in either camp. You say, you're right on this, but you're right on that. Huh? But that won't fit you into Texas cocktail parties. You understand? Because everybody wants to invite to their cocktail party fellow white Republicans, right? And if you don't think like that, and you offer some bit of intuitive, bigger picture awareness, you will probably not be invited back to the next cocktail party. Now, if that's where your whole agenda and world is, you'll retreat. You'll retreat to stages 1 and 2, where most people will like you. Understand? At 3.5, you start not fitting in, and you have to come to contemplative outreach conventions to to be sure that you're sane. Because you start feeling crazy out there. What's wrong with me? I don't fit in my parish anymore. I don't fit, you know, and you won't. So this is the beginning of non-dual thinking, the beginnings of unitive consciousness. Now again, if you think this is some kind of new stuff from New Mexico, let's go back to the early desert fathers already gave us 3 stages, the purgative way, the illumination way, the illuminative way, and the unitive way. It's all going toward non-dual consciousness. But stages 1 and stages 2 and 3 are purgation. But intuitive intelligence, 3.5, is the beginnings of illumination. Just the beginnings. Don't think you're there yet. Non-dual thinking is just beginning, but you haven't practiced it enough, you haven't lived with it enough, you haven't maybe studied it enough or been affirmed in it enough to trust yourself. You really think, I'm a bit crazy, and you start keeping your thoughts to yourself. Because you know, at the Thanksgiving dinner, you'll just create a fight if you talk this way. So you just, you know, you tell your wife to tell you to just, you know, bite your lip. Don't say it. Because you know you'll create a big fight between the Republicans and the Democrats at the table. What's happening at this stage is head and heart are starting to work together. Starting. This is synthesis. This is integration. or, you know, when Jesus' most synthetic integrative line was, you must love the Lord your God with your whole heart, with your whole soul, with your whole mind, with your whole strength. So don't anybody say holistic thinking is some new idea, right? There it is, straight from Jesus. He says, these have got to start working together. And too much of Western Christianity has been entirely head-based, and not just head-based, but left part of that, just right here. And I always say, you know, we priests, we pour water over the forehead, and thank God, because that's where the control tower is. That's what needs baptizing, is right there. But true baptism, and the Baptists are much closer to it than the Catholics, is when the whole body is nakedly immersed into the water. Huh? The entire body goes down, and now we've discovered John the Baptist's cave, and what, 28 steps down into the water. Now, every woman knows the transformative meaning of 28. We use this in men's work. You say 28 to the men, they don't even bat an eye, you know? When you work with women's groups, they immediately know. 28 is the magic number of the moon, of the woman's cycle, of the stages of death and resurrection, the paschal mystery which is written into a woman's body. Huh? But the male, the reason the male had to have initiation is because it isn't written into our body. We don't understand you got to take 28 steps down into the drowning pool. So with that, we move to stage 4. Information, 1. Knowledge, 2. 3, intelligence divided into 2 parts. Stage 4, I'm going to call understanding. One begins to connect all these smaller holes with the whole, we would say God. This would be a somewhat fully integrated worldview. I think Jesus' metaphor for that is the kingdom of God, the big picture. And most of his parables are about living inside of the big picture. And if you read so many of them, they all break down quid pro quo logic. The most obvious one being where the guy who comes at the last hour is paid as much as the one who's been working since the morning. See, that doesn't make sense if you're in stages 1, 2, or even 3. At stage 4, where grace has now become common to you, that parable names the very meaning of your soul. Because you know you're the one who came at the last hour. And that you didn't earn this love. You didn't achieve this goodness. It's all the gift of God. So at stage 4, the understanding stage, I begin to be a part of the great chain of being. My desire is not to be individually correct. My desire is to be connected. To live inside of the Trinitarian flow. Visible and invisible, inner and outer, form and formless, matter and spirit now are working together as one. You don't think dualistically that matter is bad and spirit is good, huh? That can't be true because God became flesh in Jesus, which forever made the place of the flesh a good place, not a bad place. But if you haven't experienced incarnation, if you haven't experienced God dwelling in your flesh and that you are the body of Christ, you still will think flesh is bad and spirit is good. I'm convinced, by the way, because I know what you smart ones are thinking right now. You're saying, well, Paul says so. I'm convinced Paul was a mystic and a dialectical thinker who did play off two ideas against one another. But we understood him with dualistic mind. But he is not a dualistic thinker. Please take my word for that. It took me 11 tapes to try to teach it. But if once you get it, you get it. He's not dualistic. He's trying to play the two ideas off of one another, which is called a dialectic. And that's the way you have to teach very often, to find the tertium quid, the something in between, the spirit between the Father and the Son. So I will call stage 4 mini mysticism. It's early stage contemplation. And for those of you who were involved in the charismatic movement back in the 70s or 80s, or maybe you still are, I do think the great power of the charismatic movement was that it introduced an awful lot of people to many mysticism. But then they didn't have good contemplative teachers back in the 70s to help them move to understand this first parting of the veil that they call the baptism in the Spirit. And I think that's true of an awful lot of our people. They have the state, the momentary state of unitive consciousness, or a moment of enlightenment, a moment of God experience. But there's no one around like Thomas Keating or John Maine or Lawrence Freeman or Cynthia Bourgeau to say, okay, here's how you turn this momentary state into a permanent trait. That's what this group is doing. You are learning how to turn these momentary states that the charismatic movement had, in all authenticity, I think. But they didn't have the tools and the practices to turn momentary states into permanent traits. And contemplation, contemplative outreach, like few other groups, is giving us precisely those tools and those practices to know how to do that. So here I begin to meet reality, not measure it, meet it on its own terms. You let it be what it is, without a need to categorize it, label it, control it, explain it, or even understand it. Now, do you want to know what the word for that is? Faith. I would say, my understanding of biblical faith starts at stage 4. Up to that point, it's all religion. And nothing wrong with religion. It got us all started, and it's good as far as it goes. But where it always does is send you to a bigger picture where you start critically even seeing the dark side of religion. That doesn't mean you throw it out, but you look at it much more critically. That's adult Christianity, and it's happening all over the world today, where we are producing, I think, an amazingly high percentage of stage 3.5, stage 4 people. Now, let me give you this, and this is one of the most important things I'm going to say. The sign that you are at a higher stage, and I know the danger of talking about higher stages, I really do. It appeals to the ego, right? But the sign that you are at a higher stage is that you can be sympathetic, empathetic, and accepting of all the previous stages. There, that's one of the most important things I'm saying in this hour, right? If you cannot love, accept, understand, be patient with, forgive, use whatever word you want, people in stage 1 or 2, then I know you're in stage 2 yourself, at best, probably in stage 1. The sign of an enlightened person is you have immense compassion and patience with, because you know you were there once. Look how long it took for God to get us to where we are today, and how often we've backtracked. By the way, under stress, you go back to stage 1 and 2. Under stress, you regress. Almost everybody does. But once you've had a taste of paradox and mystery, and you don't need to nail everything down, it is what it is. I had a marvelous but very sad funeral for a couple, or a man, who I knew both of them, who had been married almost 60 years, and spent some time talking to the widow afterwards, who's been a dear friend for years. And she's a wise and holy woman, lives in Arizona. And I remember when she said to me, and this was only, 3 days after, she says, "Richard, it is what it is." And that was after telling me, she went out in the gully behind her house and said she would just cry uncontrollably. Just how can he not exist anymore, this man that she had loved for 60 years? The world made no sense. And yet she had this grace-filled place inside of her. "Richard, it is what it is, and it's okay." And she meant that. That wasn't said begrudgingly. There was a freedom of soul, a freedom of spirit to accept the absurd, to accept the impossible, the death of someone she'd been bonded with for 60 years. So that's what stage 4 people can say. It is what it is. they don't need to label it, categorize it, fix it, control it, explain it, or even understand it. That's faith. With that, we move to stage 5. And I guess you can begin to hand out those handouts because we're almost at the end. We're going to call stage 5 the wisdom stage. At stage 5, your mind is now your servant instead of your master. That's what you're practicing in contemplation. You don't let the mind lead the way anymore. Because it's stinking thinking, as the alcoholics say, you know? It's obsessive thinking. It's self-serving thinking. It's egocentric thinking. It's small mind. It's egocentric self. It's, as Thomas said this morning, it's false self. That mind can't get you very far. And so that mind has to be put to the side. Do you know, both in Isaiah and in Paul, maybe you noted this, when they list the gifts of the Spirit, didn't it strike you as unusual that knowledge and wisdom were two different gifts? Didn't you always say, well, aren't they sort of the same thing? No, they're not. Knowledge is the gift of the first half. Wisdom is a completely different gift of the second half. But you got to go through knowledge. There's no nonstop flight to wisdom. Did you know that? No way. Everybody starts egocentric. The best they move to is care, and a small percentage move to universal care. You know, many stay at stage 1, egocentrism. That's an overlay on this paradigm. So all previous stages in wisdom are included, used, and honored. You learn from every one of them. Stage 1 was good. You need some good information. If I didn't have at least a bit of good information, I couldn't be sitting here talking to you now, could I? Huh? Stage 2 is good, or you can't make sense to people at stage 2. You know, at best, both Fowler and Gilligan and Kohlberg, they all said this, all these developmental psychologists and theologians, the best you can do, and this is on a good day, is understand people one stage above yourself. If you're stage 2, you can stretch to understand stage 3, and that's a stretch. So if we have Jesus, who is clearly a stage 6 person, you see why most of the church has never been prepared to understand the gospel. It's just, he's beyond. And we pull it down, just like we did Paul, into dualistic moralisms. These people are going to heaven, these people are going to hell. You know, it didn't create wisdom, it didn't create compassion, it didn't create patience. It didn't create fortitude or humility, all the things that we call the Christian virtues. So at the wisdom stage, there's no need to divide the field, as I said this morning, for the sake of being right, being in control, or being perfect. Perfection is a mathematical concept not available to human beings. All is allowed to teach you. You are patient with paradox. You're patient with mystery. Paradox, if you're not real familiar with the term, is something that at lower levels of logic appears to be a contradiction. But when you live with it longer, you hold it at more magnanimous levels, the seeming contradiction is overcome. Now, I think that's what faith does for you. Suffering does the same. Love does the same. Where seeming contradictions are overcome in a larger whole. You keep reframing it. And in the bigger whole, the smaller logic doesn't work anymore. What I think it means to be a wise person is to see the big whole, the big picture. We used to say in Latin, sub specie aeternitate. In the light of eternity, when you're on your deathbed, will this really matter? Whether you got in the A line for Southwest Airlines, you know? Now, I say that to you because I got my A boarding pass this morning. Or if someone crowded in front of you, In the end, does that matter? But when you're caught in the little picture, it matters. This is an issue of justice, you know? ma'am, you crowded in front of me. Well, maybe there is a place for saying that, but maybe there isn't a place. Maybe you need to practice humility or not getting your own way. Do you understand? That might be more valuable for your soul today than asserting your supposed rights to, you know, have your place in line. So you're much more patient with mystery, with paradox, with seeming contradictions. This, I believe, is the contemplative stance as such. Now, this wisdom, usually we just put our foot into it, we try it out, we experience it for a moment in the presence of great pain or great love. So I distinguish stage 5 from stage 6. Stage 6 is when it becomes more or less, and I totally agree with Father Thomas this morning, it never becomes total, never, I don't think. But more or less, it becomes your regular way of looking at reality. That when you wake up in the morning, you're patient with contradiction, with mystery, and with paradox. In yourself, in the world, in your children, that doesn't mean you don't work to change them if it needs to be. But you can't start with the need to change it. You feel the difference? The first lens through which you read the moment, this is why I founded the center. We were a training place for activists because I saw so many peace and justice activists who were angry people who just needed to change. There's a constant oppositional energy. They could never be happy with anything. Huh? And I recognized so many people who had good peace and justice teaching, read the social documents of the Catholic Church, that maybe they were working to change the world, but they weren't very well changed themselves. And that the first lens has to be, it is what it is. You have to be free to say yes before you say no. That's contemplation. You have to be free to say yes to the moment, to love it for what it is, to accept it for what it is, to not need to change it too much. You follow me? Now, when you're sure, you can say yes, and I don't need to change it to be happy. I can get through this day. I'm in union with God, and therefore I'm at the center of the universe. I can get through this day without fixing his problem or changing her right now. Until I can live out of that peace, that freedom, that non-need to fix, control, and change other people. Then, ironically, paradoxically, you're free to move in and work to change it. Isn't that amazing? Because you don't need to change it. And I can feel the difference in 2 minutes between people who have to change you, all right, and people who can say it so kindly. You know, Richard, I misunderstood you, but did you say, I'm sure it was my misunderstanding. You know, they'll be so humble, but they'll offer their criticisms, and sometimes they're right on. All I have to say, because I talk so much, I shouldn't have said it that way. You're absolutely right. But it's so easy for me to hear their criticism, do you understand? Because it comes from such a kind, clean, spacious heart, you know? I got an email, I'm not making this up, the day, Thursday before I left. A woman, and I know she meant well, I hope she meant well. She said, every time you use the word he for God, and I try to use both, but I guess I'm not always as balanced as I should be. I do know God is beyond gender. But it was just a one-line email. She said, every time you use the word he for God, I want to vomit. And she said, I wish you would stop talking. I hate you. Goodbye. You know, I don't know how she got my email. But you see, this is not going to change the world. This is the kind of angry feminism that is just as dualistic. It's politically correct, but the soul is all wrong. Do you understand? There's no love. There's no communion. So if we were talking face to face, she wouldn't put me in a corner, and I'm sure I would have said maybe some unkind words back if I wasn't really centered and contemplative. Darn, we do that to one another. Do you understand? But whereas when these kind people come up, And very often, their advice, their criticism of me is correct. But I can hear it, I can receive it, I can change my vocabulary and say it better next time because they were so filled with love, co-naturality. The love in them created love in me, allowed me to give them back a loving answer. But in every case, it's got to start with us. I've got to become that loving person that doesn't keep, you know, regenerating the hate and the fear and the oppression and the oppositional energy in this world. So when that becomes a state of life, that's stage six. Your consciousness actually takes on a new form, transformed, which if practiced, becomes your entire life program. This would be the saint. This would be the enlightened person who can live a greater part of his or her day letting reality be. And they don't need to change it in order to be happy. This would be the fullness of non-dual thinking. So this is going to be my next book. You just received the skeleton of what's going to be my next book. If I can clarify this and clarify this new way of seeing, I think I will have given the best gift I know how to give to the church and to our politics. Because most of it is still trying to resolve our problems from stages one and two, which only creates more angry people, more liberals versus conservatives, Democrats versus Republicans, gays versus straights. This isn't getting us anywhere and is not going to create that third something, that common ground where God's Spirit can really work and can really move.
So thank you for taking the time to listen to these episodes. Our prayer is that as you listen and reflect on these teachings, that you'll be encouraged to continue your journey to maximize your potential to have a good and a happy life. So sign in again next week for more teaching on how you can follow the Jesus way to experience your life as filled with meaning, purpose, and joy. So God bless and stay safe.